Hello, and welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Adnan Hamid. Welcome, Adnan.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Adnan is the CEO of Brecker Verification Systems and a well-known semiconductor verification luminary. We will be talking about verification for a new breed of Generation X SoCs. But first, Adnan, tell us how you came into the semiconductor industry.
I grew up in a third world country. So whereas when most people in the US were playing with their early computers in the early 80s, access to such things was hard for me. I was always fascinated. So I got my first home PC somewhere in the late 80s and quickly decided, oh, these games are silly. I got to go figure out how to program these things. I got my first PC that I could program a little bit later in the late 80s. And as soon as I learned to program, I said, oh, okay, I can program these things. I want to build these things. So I kind of knew at the age of 12 that I was going to build PCs, and that's what I worked towards.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I got access to a PC in high school, and I fell in love, but I had to see what was inside, and you know that brought me to semiconductors. So what's the backstory of Brecker?
So I grew up as a child of a diplomat. And that meant I traveled the world with a lot of pomp and circumstance. But diplomats from third world countries don't make a lot of money. And I ended up working hard and finding my way with a scholarship at Princeton on the East Coast. So this is all good. I was there on a scholarship, but still needed money for books and clothes. So I ended up working for a professor in the psych lab of all places. I was doing my double E computer science major, but I was working for the psych guy. And he was doing research on planning algorithms, right? So it's a branch of AI that's different than deep learning. So that's what I did for 3 years for him. This school, I graduated, and then I got my first job at AMD. And this would take us to the early 90s. And what do they want a new grad to do? They want a new grad to sit and write test cases. And this is when AMD was trying to do their first generation of original designs that they had not photocopied from Intel. I looked at the problem in front of me and said, first, I'm too lazy to write these tests. And second, it doesn't matter how hard I work, these guys aren't going to have enough tests by the end of this project. So I thought a little bit about this and said, but that professor in the psych department taught me how to put a planning algorithm to work, and I know how to get a computer to write all these test cases for me. And that was the original impetus behind what started this whole thing around graph-based verification. And that eventually, it was incredibly successful for the first few generations at AMD many years ago. Big respect to those folks who are doing it now, which is very different from what I did back then. But I ran with it, and eventually it's landed us up here with Brecker and with Portable Stimulus.
Great. Let's talk about the business of SoC verification.
The business of SoC verification. Well, the key points really don't change, right? They don't change across industries. What do we need? We need to get to market quickly. We need great quality. And we need to do this in an affordable manner. Motherhood apple pie. A gentleman by the name of Mike Chin did a very nice talk on this at DBCon in this presentation we did it. So I invite people to go look at it. I think he explained it much better than me, right? Market pressure is very high. There's competition for these SoCs, for these SoC slots. We are building very, very complicated designs, and trying to get the quality right is hard. And when you make mistakes, sometimes you can work around them in software, but if you don't find them, they cause delays, they annoy your customers, you can lose businesses. And then, of course, the cost of people training them, retaining them is high. So the more we can automate this instead of hiring armies of people, even if they are armies of people in Bangalore. If we can reduce that to automation, is always going to be a big win. So these are definitely the three things that are affecting the business and have since the dawn of semiconductors, right?
Yeah, SoCs have been driving the semiconductor industry for quite some time now. So where are SoCs heading today?
The problem with SoCs is complexity, right? So we're putting more and more components on these SoCs, more and more IPs, but we're relying more and more on software on the SoC, on embedded software, to orchestrate those IPs to do the functions we care about. So what do I mean by this? It used to be that, okay, we're building some four-port network switch and we can just throw random traffic at this switch and sooner or later we'll hit all our coverage. That's nice. As we move to these more complex designs, perversely, the number of things that you can do usefully on the chip go down, right? If you build some 5G LTE switch, you can't really throw random instructions at it and expect anything to happen. You got to get an organized sequence of operations to happen. And in the industry, we suffer greatly because now we have people spending a lot of time and money trying to write test cases to test these things and simply failing to do it. And what nobody wants to talk about, but is true for every one of your listeners today, is these SoCs are hard to verify. They are taping out, probably on schedule. The software guys that are spending 9 months trying to get it to work, and a lot of that time is spent trying to figure out what the hardware yahoos did, how the chip is supposed to work. It doesn't do certain things, and they work around it in software, so that takes time. And then it's going to their customer, and the customer is finding issues with it. And this is all because of gaps in verification that have not been addressed.
Verification has always been a bottleneck. You know, I started my verification career at Avante many, many years ago, you know, with the Hercules software. And verification was always a bottleneck, and it still is today, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So let's talk about SoC verification bottlenecks.
Indeed. So what's so hard about SoC verification? When you look at the data from the Wilson surveys that Mentor, now Siemens, does every couple of years, we've known for a long time that design is 30% of the cost, verification is 70% of the cost. We also know that the cost is going up. Despite improvements in automation, this cost is going up. And this is obvious, right? The complexity of verification runs as exponential to the complexity of the design. And we already said we're building these very complicated SoCs. And really, people are a little bit in the stone ages as far as writing tests are concerned, right? We're kind of writing them by hand and we're never getting done enough that we want. And our verification is limited by how many tests we can manage in terms of this. 2000 seems to be a upper limit of how many tests a group can have. After that, they simply can't write and maintain those tests. So writing tests is hard. Getting coverage is hard. People don't know what they want to cover. And you have to have these tests in multiple formats. You got to write the tests once at the IP level, UVM. You got to write them again at the SoC level, typically some kind of C program that's running on some simulation, some CPUs in simulation. And then you got to write those same tests a third time as a set of diagnostics for post-silicon bring-up. So there's a lot of inefficiencies in SoC verification that need addressing.
Let's talk a little bit about the pillars of SoC verification. I've heard you made reference of that before.
Yes. So, indeed. So I talk about three pillars that need to drive our next generation SoC verification. The first is a modeling concept, a single source of truth. The second is a coverage concept, which is I'm going to talk about three-dimensional coverage. And the third is a reuse concept, which is I'm going to talk about a synthesizable verification OS. So let me start with the modeling concept. What we are doing with graph-based verification was explained to me by an old geezer once, an old geezer for an engineer who I met in Colorado. And he said, oh, I see what you're trying to do with that. And he explained to me how NASA used to do testing for their rockets, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, right, when we sent people to the moon. And the story is important to this audience. So they would say, okay, how does this rocket work? Astronaut sitting in this seat, he pushes some button. That goes down to this piece of logic that enables relay A and relay B. When relay A goes, then this pump starts filling, and when it hits this fill mark, then something else happens and so on. So they would draw out a flowchart of how the whole system worked. Then they would trace the flowchart and each node say, what could go wrong over here, right? The astronaut pushed the switch, it might not work. Okay, what do we do about that? The first relay triggers and maybe the pump doesn't start. How do we know the pump doesn't start? What do we do to fixing it and so on? Okay, what does that have to do with SOC verification? Well, we just talked about, we build these SOCs with many, many IPs on them and rely on software to orchestrate them to do these various use cases, right? So in an LTE handset chip, right? Something in your cell phone. A common use case is data is coming screaming down the modem on the LTE modem is going to get decoded through the video codec and put in your screen, right? That is a flowchart of operations. Okay. Now, when we talk about programming the LTE modem, there's a flowchart under that, all the different ways we could use that subsystem. There's a flowchart under how we could describe each thing in the video codec and so on. Nothing I've said over here is new to any of you. When you look at verification engineers and when you watch what they really do for their work, smart engineers, you know, you'll have two or three verification leads. They'll go into a conference room and they'll have 2 hours of really animated conversations. They're excitedly drawing boxes on a whiteboard with arrows between them, explaining to each other how the device works and what needs to be tested. Then they go off to their respective cubes and spend the next 2 to 3 weeks trying to implement what they just talked about. What they drew on that board is the flowchart of how the device works. But the fact is, we don't train DB engineers to think that way. Because we come from a background of let's drive random inputs, we train people to think in terms of, okay, I'm going to randomize all my inputs and try to constrain them to hit all these cases. So they've drawn their flowchart, they're trying to hit the flowchart, and they're trying to now guide their random inputs to hit all those cases. But this just doesn't work. The idea of the planning algorithm is, hey, let's take that flowchart and feed it directly to a tool. Just as a human being thinks about it. Is it a control flow chart? Is it a data flow chart? I don't have to know. It's whatever, however the user chooses to think about the problem. And what is a planning algorithm? A planning algorithm wants to start with a goal and end objective and work backwards through a set of rules, this flow chart we're talking about, to come up with a sequence of steps that it thinks will get it from its start point to its end point. So to do this handset case that we talked about, he might start out by saying, okay, in this use case, I'm gonna show video on the screen. I need to find somebody to provide that video to me. Fine, I'm gonna have the codec provide the video to me in the format I've set up for the screen. So that constrains what the video codec can do. Now the video codec knows what kind of data it wants as input, and maybe it goes ask the modem part of the graph, please generate for me a frame of the type that I want, right? So this idea of working backwards, starting with the check and working backwards. So what's all of this all about? It is saying that the big problem in verification is we are not good about having a good algebra to write down what our verification intent is. The correct algebra is to think about what our design has to do as a hierarchy of flowcharts, capture those flowcharts directly, the way human beings think about it, and let some tool go off, flatten that flowchart, and search all the paths through it. Okay. So when I talk about modeling, well, getting back to my three pillars, when I talk about modeling, the first thing is a single source of truth. Okay, single source of truth is this flowchart. It's a composable model, right? The importance of this flowchart is we should be able to take any step in the flowchart and go apply that subset of tests to the IP that belongs to it. And we should be able to test all its inputs and outputs. And then we should be able to compose the IP models into the system models. And along the way, we have evolved into portable stimulus, which is, I've been working on this problem since 2008. Now there's a standard around it and a name around it, which is all very good. And all portable stimulus is, as a language, is a way to describe flowcharts in code. So that's the modeling, single source of truth. second pillar, coverage. So I'm going to talk about three-dimensional coverage. The three dimensions shall be combinatorial coverage, sequential coverage, and concurrency coverage. Start with combinatorial coverage. This is what we all know and love. System Verilog gives us combinatorial coverage. At a particular event or a particular clock, we can ask, hey, what combination of states have we seen? And tools will very nicely tell us. This is a beautiful thing. We absolutely need it. We're not going to get rid of it. It is not enough. On top of that, we want sequential coverage. What is sequential coverage? We want to know that we have seen a test where data came in from a modem, was decoded by the video codec and put on the screen. We also want to know that we did a different flow, which is data came in from the modem, was decoded as voice, and we were able to make a phone call. Right? And maybe while we're doing that, we're doing something on the internet or whatever. So there are all these different flows. Right? What is our SoCs? A bunch of little offload engines with software orchestrating. Okay, agent A, do this transfer. Once you're done, agent B, do this decode. Agent C, then do this with the data. So sequential coverage allows tools to automatically come back and report to us. Here are all the flows that got tested from that flowchart. Okay, now let's acknowledge that the total number of flows that any SoCs has to support are probably larger, certainly larger than the number of tests we can run, and probably larger than the number of seconds till the sun blows up or something like that. So we are still in the business of identifying which subset of those flows we can usefully test. And the kind of answer we have to come to is, okay, I'm going to do 1,000 simulation, I'm going to do 10,000 emulation, and I'm going to do 100,000 in post-silicon. My total population is probably close to a billion, but I've got to pick the right 100,000 to tape out with because I can't run a billion. Okay. So this is sequential coverage. But that also is not enough. On top of sequential coverage, we got to be thinking about concurrency coverage. So what am I talking about? Okay, so we have this one use case, bring data down the modem, send it through the video codec, send it to the screen. That's fine. But while I'm watching a video, I expect to answer the phone. So there at the same time, I could be running a second flow, get voice data off the modem, send it through the video for audio processor and send it to speaker and so on. So we want to know, have we seen these runs all stack against each other in time, right? Hardware is inherently concurrent. So this is information asking, hey, have I seen all the concurrency cases for all my use cases? So I'm on my three pillars. The first one was modeling. We talked about modeling flowcharts. The second one is about 3D coverage. We talked about combinatorial coverage. We talked about sequential coverage. We talked about concurrency coverage. The last pillar is portability. So we talk about a synthesizable verification OS. What's this all about? Every one of your listeners at some point learned to program Hello World under a Unix machine. It's a three-line program, we compile it, we run it, and magically we get our hello world. Let's think a little bit about what had to happen over there, okay? To actually get that string, hello world, printed to the screen, there was a lot of complex code in the OS that took that string, somehow routed it to the kernel, somehow went to the windowing system, and the letter showed up in the right place on your screen. Magic, right? So printf is hard. Somebody took care of launching your program, right? When you ran that printf, there were probably 40 other processes already running on that machine, and you were just one more. This program needed some resources. Somehow memory got allocated, and the OS kept track of where that memory was so that our program could run. Why am I bothering to mention all of this? When we go to run a simple test case in an IP bench in UVM, let's say I'm testing a lowly DMA. Turns out we've got to solve all the same problems. I need to be able to do some debug, so I need some kind of a printf. In the case of UVM, it's going to go to UVM info. That's cool. I probably can do multiple concurrent transfers on this DMA, so somehow I got to manage lots of threads. Traditionally in UVM, we would fork off a bunch of sequences, which is fine, but now managing the synchronization of those sequences can get hard. And I need to allocate some memory for that DMA transfer. I don't really have an answer, right? People write their own memory allocators. So that's fine. But now I need to test that same DMA at the SoC level. Now those things that I forked off in UVM for the multiple threads, they got to become some kind of threads across multiple processors in my SoC. How do I do that? The printf that went to a UVM info over here has been triggered by a CPU and we have to do some kind of trick boxing thing to get the printf to show up. And now memory management is a lot harder, and I got to make sure that the memory that's being used by my DMA doesn't overlap with memory from anybody else. Okay, so I'm solving the same problems, right? When I go to post-silicon diagnostics, again, we are running on bare metal. We don't have an OS, and we got to solve the same problems, right? How do I manage printf? Now you're going to be printing that message over a console interface, like something like a UART. You still got to manage the threading, but now you got to manage the threading in a post-silicon, you're on a board in the lab kind of notion. You got to manage memory, right? And you don't quite have the same access to memory as you have in simulation. In simulation, we can do all kinds of backdoor tricks, which speeds up simulation. In post-silicon, you got to do that very much through front door. So what does this have to do with my third pillar of portability and a synthesizable verification OS? It is the recognition that in addition to writing the test content, where what human beings are doing is they're thinking through that flowchart we talked about, the one that got drawn on the whiteboard, and trying to handwrite a sequence of operations. They're also trying to manage the concurrency. They're trying to do the memory management. They're trying to deal with synchronizing I/O. They're trying to deal with how the printfs work. And if we could abstract these all to a set of operations that then can be synthesized by a tool to go to each of these platforms, then what you have done for verification, what was done by logic synthesis at Synopsys 30 years ago, right? So what am I after? You put these three things together, the three pillars, right? The modeling, the coverage, and the synthesizable verification OS. Now we can write a high-level abstract model, and from it, we can synthesize test cases. Because Brecker uses a planning algorithm, when we synthesize test cases, we can synthesize not only the stimulus, but also the checks. We automatically synthesizing the coverage measurement, and we're synthesizing high-level debug information. Fine. But then that synthesis goes through an optimization flow. And if I'm going to go to UVM, we generate one kind of test. If I got fork things, if I'm going to deem multiple threads, I'm going to fork them as UVM threads. If I'm doing printf, I'm going to go to UVM info and so on. But from the same model, I can synthesize for my SoC simulation. And maybe I manage memory through backdoor access and my printfs are trick boxed correctly and so on. And now if I want to go instead to post-silicon, I'm generating a third kind of test. These three types of tests don't look like each other, but they have exactly the same intention. And in post-silicon, I got to do my printfs across the console and do memory management by front door, but I have more cycles, so I can do this. So all these differences. And in the end, you end up with something very analogous to logic synthesis. Today, there used to be a time when people drew schematics by hand. Right? Today, if you even mentioned that, you'd be laughed off the planet, right? We're going to go write for our log RTL once. We're going to send it through some synthesis engine, and we're going to get gates created for us. If we're going to go from 25 nanometer technology to 15 nanometer, we're just going to push the button again, get completely different gates, but we're guaranteed they have the same behavior. This is so much in our DNA, we stop thinking about it. Why can't I do the same thing for test, for verification? Why can't I write one model and go from that model, generate tests for each of my IP benches, then compose those models together to generate tests for my SoC, synthesize the right output for emulation, synthesize the right output for post-silicon. So that is the problem we have solved with these three pillars.
Okay, and then let's talk about the practical application of the SoC verification pillars.
Absolutely. So the thing with Brecker is we've never been about building technology. We've always been about solving problems. And from day one, every piece of technology we've built, every evolution has been driven by our customers. So we have experience running back to 2003, which was nearly 20 years, 17 years, of applying planning algorithms to verification problems. And we've learned a lot along the way. We have many, many customers. I think a few years ago, we did some little thing of, hey, there's been over 100 tapeouts with planning with graph-based verification. But let me talk about three of the case studies that are on my website. All three are announced with the customer, right? So in addition to solving and building these planning algorithms, right, we offer a set of pre-built libraries, okay, from so-called Trek apps. These are apps to solve certain common problems that we see over and over again. So we have something around coherency, we have something around power management, something around security, something around networking, and a few others. One case study that we have is with Broadcom, where what they were trying to do is test, it was all about a power management chip, and there was a lot of synchronization that had to happen between what was happening on the embedded C code on the power management controller and the signals that were coming in on the wires. So that was done using our power management app. A second one I can talk about is Huawei, where we got deep into their 5G program, both on their baseband processing, the modem IP, as well as the backend networking chips, right? And over there, they were using our cache coherency app to verify this the networking side, which is a sea of processors, and they were using a planning algorithm based solution to testing the hardware scheduling in their baseband processor. Third use case I can talk about is in the FPGA space with Altera, who is now Intel, right? And for many years, they've used our cache coherency app to verify the hard SoC part of their FPGAs. So the point is that this is all very real. And as far as the users are concerned, it's new, right? There's this new Xara thing around portable stimulus. Everybody's talking about it. Nobody really knows what it is. And the fact is the language is still in its early days, but that's okay. We can work with it. But the technology behind this is mature, and once we show verification engineers how to think, they're already thinking about the problems as a flowchart, right? When I show them the flowchart of the thing, they go, "Yeah, that's what I told you. That's what I explained to you in words." But then when I show them that, hey, I can directly transcribe that flowchart for the tool, and the tool goes generates tests off of it, then they're all in. So very practical technology.
Great, great, excellent content. Thank you, Adnan. I think this is a good place to stop. Do you have any final words that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, I'm speaking now to all the verification managers, verification engineers, and VPs of engineering. You're spending a lot of money on verification. It's giving you a big headache, and it is your weakest link in your business process. We can do better. Come talk to us.
Good closing. Thank you, Adnan. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.